You're listening to the IAB UK podcast, and welcome to our Steering Group Specials, a three-part mini-series in partnership with the IAB Steering Groups. Our Steering Groups bring together leading experts in mobile in-app, video, and display advertising to work on initiatives that help drive sustainable growth within digital. In this episode, hear from members of our Video Steering Group as they share tips and advice on creative and planning best practice within online video advertising. Here's Vincent Tessier from MoPub at Twitter, Jennifer Bunting from LinkedIn, and Chris Hansen from Mail Metro Media, speaking to IAB UK CMO James Chandler.
Hello and welcome to the IAB UK podcast. From the IAB, I'm James Chandler with another episode in our series of Steering Group Specials. Today, we're talking video, easily the fastest growing part of online advertising in the UK, up a staggering 34% in 2019. But we know all about the growth in investment. We know all about the various platforms and formats and types. We know that time and time again, it's video that's proved to be incredibly effective when we come to things like long-term brand growth. But even today in 2020, despite all of these good things, there's still plenty to get when it comes to how video is planned and from a creativity point of view, what good actually looks like. And who better to provide some surefire expertise around all the best practice than the IAB's Video Steering Group, represented on the podcast today by Jennifer Bunting, Head of EMEA Product Marketing for LinkedIn, Chris Hansen, Commercial Video Specialist for Mail Metro Media, and Vincent Tessier, Brand and Agency Lead for EMEA for MoPub, who were, of course, acquired by Twitter in 2013. A very warm welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Pleasure. As specialist subjects go, you've chosen planning and creative practice in video. I mean, we could have picked any number of things, but Jennifer, why is this of sort of such importance to the Video Steering Group?
That's a good question, James. And I think it's one of these questions that as marketers, it never really ceases to be relevant for us. You always have to be optimizing your creative for best performance. Your creative will get stale, so you can't rely on the same thing for too long. But also, particularly for video, and in the digital world, there's so much conflicting advice out there. It's really hard to separate out the myth from what performance and what good actually looks like for your brand and your audience.
Well, we've got a bunch of practical advice coming up. There's loads of top tips, there's best practice. Hopefully what we share with people is going to be incredible because it's already non-platform specific, which is fantastic. But let's get straight into some of the things that you come across. For me, there's been this big thing around, particularly with the rise of social platforms so many years ago, this 6-second thing became like gospel, that suddenly everything had to be 6 seconds. You had to have your logo and your brand in that first second. You had to flip the television narrative and the arc and all that sort of stuff. That was always the advice I learned when I was in agency side from people. Does it all still hold true now, Jen?
I think the short answer to the question of shorter video, pun intended, is no, it isn't true. But the longer answer is it really depends on what you're trying to do. It's definitely one of these areas that's debated. I remember sitting around getting a coffee at Adweek London just a couple years ago, and everyone was debating this. Is this actually true for my brand? So I don't know that everyone always bought into it, but it's easy to hold on to a metric, and that's a very memorable one. I think the shorter your video is, the better it works for upper funnel things, especially if you are a brand that isn't well known. You're asking for their attention as an advertiser and on a social platform. You're coming in between the content and their feed. You're trying to stop their thumbs. So shorter helps with that. But if you've got something complicated and you're trying to explain how something works, like an unboxing video may be longer than 6 seconds, but it's highly effective.
Chris, surely there's a bit of dependent on context here as well, isn't there? So 6 seconds in a sort of a longer form content maybe would jar a little bit. What do you think on the 6-second rule, as it were?
Exactly, with regards to the context is obviously massively important. So we all know mobile attention spans are a lot shorter than attention spans that you'll see on TV, for example. So yes, that's obviously important. But I think to Jen's point, we need to understand exactly what success is for the marketer. And actually, 6 seconds does serve a very good purpose for those advertisers who are actually just trying to get a short, snappy message out, focused on mobile and want to execute there. So yes, it serves its purpose, but again, it's specific for what the brand deems success to be, and that's important to state from the outset.
Lindsay, you must have guidelines that you work with agencies, advertisers all the time. There must be guidance of which here's a sort of an optimal length. And if there isn't, clearly that must be a question you get asked all the time, is how long should these things be?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this 6-second trend, I think, was just a balancing the fact that traditionally on TV ads are way longer, so we went on the road of really short, and I think it was really pushed by social platforms, whereas what I personally see is actually video ads on average are more between 15 and 30 seconds, and that's where I think you can really shine and have great performances. And also, one need to keep in mind that it really depends on the publisher. So we are an SSP service, so it's basically the publishers who decide which placement and what type of ads and creative they're going to accept on the bid response. It's all about programmatic, right? The opportunities to reach users can vary if you only have one format. So I think the best advice is really to have a set of various length, and then you can optimize against your different set of creatives. I think that's really the best way forward.
But the other thing, less hotly debated perhaps, is the idea of sound off as well, because I guess television is a captive audience, and I don't know a huge number of people that watch it. Perhaps you'd watch it with subtitles on if there's something else going on, or you're having a haircut or something like that. But inherently, the soundtrack or the conversation, the audio, is such a integral part of that narrative arc in television. Obviously not the same if you're sat on a bus on a sort of ropey 3G connection on your mobile phone, but any sort of best practice around sound off as much as there is on things like 6 seconds, Jen?
Yeah, sound and audio is so important, and a lot of marketers will agonize over the music in the background and writing the script and what have you. On a platform like LinkedIn specifically, 79% of videos on the platform are consumed with the sound completely off.
Wow.
And it's even higher on other platforms. So really understanding that in the creative process, I think, is super important. And there's things you can do to work around it. The most simple thing is, if you're being given video content and it relies on a script after speaking, definitely caption it, subtitle it. That helps. But also text overlays are super helpful, especially if you're working on a piece of creative and it's animation. It's easy to add that in. Yeah. You can add it in on other things. One pitfall I do see some advertisers do is all of a sudden you have nothing but copy you're reading. And so it's not pleasant as an audience. And your performance will fall. I watched a couple hundred video ads that ran on LinkedIn, and the bottom performers oftentimes relied on a lot of copy. So think about that. Also, montages. You don't need the music to watch the montage. And also thinking about how you can tell stories without necessarily words being spoken, especially if you've got some text overlay. It's easy to get around it.
Do you think the same, Chris?
I think probably quite like an obvious answer, but very important. And as Jen says, probably gets overlooked quite often. But more importantly, I think, again, no pun intended, but you need loud creatives. You need eye-catching creatives, especially if we are moving towards this more digital world of having shorter form content. You've only got a limited space of time to actually capture the user's attention. And then with audio off, there's more of a challenge there. So I think eye-catching creative is 100%. There's a lot more onus on it. Again, may sound like a simple thing to say, but it's definitely very important.
Timelines being what they are, you're not always blessed with being able to see creative a week out and give feedback on it. But are there times when you guys will get a set of creative and it is effectively the 30-second TV ad, and you can push back a little bit and say, do you know what, by doing this and this, it can make it better?
Yeah, I think from Mount Metro Media's perspective, we're blessed with an in-house creative team. Lots of clients who want to do, you know, longer-term partnerships. Yes, we often, especially on the run-up to Christmas, we'll get some very short turnaround times. But I think our recommendations always are the main thing is to test multiple creatives. So not only for the sake that you can optimize between two or three different creatives, but also one thing the market is very paranoid/wary about is bombarding users with the same ad. So that's where we think we provide a great service, in the sense that we're creating 3-4 different bespoke creatives for the same campaign. And you have really positive results.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing more and more subtitling now, whether it's on social, kind of wherever it is, it feels like the norm now. You see a world where everything just is by default subtitled in some way, shape or form. Wherever you are, you at least get the gist of it, even if you're not getting the full technicolor razzmatazz of whatever the creative director had intended. But anything best practice wise that you always share, Vincent, around Sandoff? Or does it really come back to, again, what you were saying before about what publishers are and aren't going to accept?
One thing to know is by default, for instance, at MoPub, we respect the user sound setting at the device level.
Right.
So for instance, me personally, my phone is always silent. It's always with the sound off. So I really choose to listen to a content or to an ad. And I believe we are living in an opt-in world.
Yeah.
So that's for data, but also if I want to engage with an advertiser or with the content. So the user really want to decide. So really sound is really critical when you think about mobile advertising. And of course, another thing is orientation. So horizontal or vertical. Obviously TV, there is the fact that TV is always one way. On mobile, obviously you can move your device around. And if you think of the app inventory, for instance, which is the majority of the apps user consume, games, for instance, usually you hold your device horizontally.
Yes, yeah.
And the majority of the totality, basically, 100% of ads running there can only be horizontal. So you need to take this in account. Again, sound orientation of your ad are critical if you want to win in the mobile programmatic space in that case.
And I guess the context, again, is so important. If you're on Snapchat, you're on TikTok, is only ever going to run the other way. So I guess it's slightly horses for courses. I think that's such a brilliant point. I remember watching lots of telly ads actually at the very start of lockdown, where because filming companies, production companies couldn't go out and film stuff, you had lots of user-generated things. So you had loads of vertical video on TV, which I thought was quite interesting. The only other place you'd seen it before is rolling Sky News when someone's shooting something that's happening on their smartphone. But I just thought it was interesting how the sort of the tables had turned and suddenly we had nothing but.
Yeah.
Let's stick with in-game and in-app, Vincent, and specifically talk about rewarded video. Because I know from my agency days, some of the questions I always had from clients were really tough ones. Like, surely there's no benefit to me as a client if I'm forcing someone, if they want to get to the next level or whatever, if I'm forcing someone to watch my video, that doesn't feel like a positive experience. I'm slightly playing devil's advocate here, of course.
Yeah.
But what would you say to that?
I love this discussion because when you're watching TV or listening to radio, you cannot skip. So you also are forced to watch or listen to an ad. So for me, there's no real difference on this specific creative compared to all the other digital or offline format.
Yeah.
So for some reason, the industry has some kind of misconception and basically misunderstanding of the format. And it's really an amazing format. You know, some trading desk really started 6 months, a year ago to understand that, test around, and they saw amazing results. And it really helps balance your campaign performances. Obviously, view through rate, completion rate are really amazing. And I believe it's a very legitimate way to reach to consumers and really talk about your brands and tell your story.
And inventory wise, there must be loads of it. And you think about all various levels of all various games, there's so much of this stuff.
Yeah, and surprisingly, maybe from a brand perspective, it is actually very crowded and demanded because it's really for app install, user acquisition type of campaign. This is really the king of the format.
Yeah.
It is working really well. So yeah, something that brands really start to embrace.
Let's switch gears to the wonderful world of B2B and sort of best placed here, Jen. B2B has always been a distant cousin to the sort of slightly more glamorous B2C, isn't it? But there must be stuff that we can learn from the Unilevers of the world and the Mars and the Coca-Cola's doing B2C stuff. What are some of those things that the best practice have you can learn and apply to B campaigns?
So what can B2B learn from B2C? I think a lot of things, and you're right, like when I went to university, I thought I was going to eventually get a job at Nike or a famous B2C brand, and then I ended up in B2B. And the perception, you don't win the awards, but you're not in it for the awards, you're creating ads. And so I think there's a lot, you don't have to get mired in a bunch of metrics and product specs. That's what B2B used to be. I don't think it's that way anymore, but that's still the reputation. So I think some marketers are starting to think about what they can borrow. I think one of the biggest things you can do though as a B2B marketer is be more open to a sense of humor and wit in your creative. We did a survey at LinkedIn about 2 years ago, and we surveyed B2B marketers all over the world. And by and large, the tone that they thought they needed to take in video was informative and helpful. That has a lot of personality, right? In the UK, it was over 32% that they needed to be informative and helpful. But that's that person's perception as a marketer. Have they asked their audience what they want? Because we survey LinkedIn members and ask, what tone do you want? We ask thousands of people around the world, and 75% of UK members of LinkedIn said they wanted wit and humor. Now, they still need it to be relevant and helpful for the environment, but why not have a little sense of humor? I think that's an important learning.
And of course, the IAB are in the B2B world because we're talking to you guys, we're talking to the rest of the industry. We started a campaign a couple of years ago. We created a day called National Anti-Clickthrough Rate Day, and we created a campaign called Don't Be a Clickhead. And it was the response was really positive, but there were, in some places, they were like, why is a trade body, it's sort of B2B, why are they doing this sort of thing that's quite funny and taking the piss? It was a weird reaction in that, you know, had a Nike, as you say, done it, we'd be off to Cannes to pick up the award. It's a very strange one. In terms of the tone then, it's all right to be playful and a bit jokey and rib yourself a little bit.
I think so. No one, from a personal perspective, you don't want to be that person at a party whose jokes fall flat. So you need...
Oh, God, maybe that was us.
No, I thought that was... I think haters going to hate, James. I thought that was a brilliant campaign. And I think as marketers, a lot of marketers have a sense of humor.
Yes,
and why not play that up? So know your audience and still be relevant. So the Don't Be a Clickhead, I'm afraid I'm going to say it wrong on the podcast. Don't Be a Clickhead campaign. You had data behind it, and that's what's important. You can be funny, but have a purpose and get to the point. And I think a lot of people are just scared of finding out what the right balance is.
Chris, let's stay with Don't Be a Clickhead and move on a little bit to think about the reason we've done that is because we had a whole toolkit on measurement, because consistently, whatever it might be, measurement is still a little bit of a barrier when we come to digital. We feel like sometimes we're a bit obsessed with clicks and those real vanity metrics. What's the things you get asked most in terms of how you understand that something's working in video?
Yeah, good question. I literally got asked yesterday what the CTR of our video player was. Again, marketers need to define success at the start of, or before their campaign is even created, you know, before the brief is sent out. And success, either if it's brand uplift, cool, that's quite hard to measure, and we appreciate that. Maybe looking at click-through rate and whatnot doesn't work there. But I think often, and this is where digital is potentially made a rod for its own back, in the sense that you can measure absolutely everything.
And
if one of those measurements of viewability, completion rate, click-through, etc. is down, then it's going to get flagged ultimately. But then you can flip that on its head and say that is also the beauty of it. I think viewability and completion rates are naturally the sort of main two metrics that we look towards in video, and that's what we hone our products to make sure they're both performing well. And again, if you're looking at digital versus TV, that's maybe somewhere where sort of digital does flourish, in the sense that you can actually measure your ads, that your ads are playing in view 100% of the time, for example. And that's one of the different benefits of digital. But yes, it's a tough conversation internally. And whilst marketers have access to this data, I think they will always feel like they are able to ask the questions of why it's down. So what is the solution to that? I don't know, but I think you sort of have to flip it on its head and look at it as a positive.
And I like that you have to go into these things knowing what you want to know. And if it is, you need to invest in econometrics or market mix modeling or put something in place which is going to do it. Vincent, we talked a little bit about rewarded video. Do you think there's other environments that are still untapped? Video's seen this massive growth, 34% last year. We'll see what happens this year, because this is the year we're all going to forget about. But anything that you still think is untapped despite all that growth?
I would say, very simply, the in-app environment is for the vast majority still untapped for brands. And when I say brands, it's really in a large sense. And this is a massive opportunity. We all know this is the majority of the time spent is in-app. And the inventory is absolutely premium. And I love to have the discussion around brand safety with apps, because apps is a very strict, controlled environment from a technical perspective. And right now what I see is a lot of questions around viewability. So for instance, At MoPub, we are adopting actually this month the IAB Tech Lab initiative, so the open measurement. So we are seeing massive interest. And it's fair that for a long time, app was not offering the same standards, but now it's here. And so in terms of metrics, to go back on this, I really see very interesting improvements on the way buyers are seeing their campaigns performing. And so viewability, completion, sometimes I see specifically on FMCG, some kind of new KPI merging viewability, completion rate, as well as Nielsen DAR on target. So that's really hard, to be fair, to be able to serve for many reasons. But I believe, yeah, the viewability plus completion rate is really now the standard, way more obviously than CTR, which it doesn't really make sense at all overall, but specifically for video, right?
Yeah, totally. We're getting into upfront season where we're starting to look ahead to 2021, thank God. Something we can now get excited about. And I wondered if I might canvas your opinions on some of the things you're getting excited about for the future of video, all sorts of weird and wonderful things. They might be slightly more grounded as well, which is totally fine. But Chris, what's caught your eye on stuff in 2021 that is going to be exciting from a video point of view?
I think a few things, but firstly, I think the contextual targeting capabilities or the sort of refined data signals that are going to be passed for video, or I hope are going to be passed for video and adopted more widely, are really important. So often now the sort of standard is to target the context that you're in. So for a newspaper publisher like ourselves, you'll target the video based upon like the keywords within the article. Now, we all know that the video itself, as relevant as you can get to the article, which of course our editors do, will always have some nuances or differences to that sort of keyword targeting, which sits in the text. So the ability for both us as a publisher and for the buyers to adopt targeting against what is actually happening in the video, I think is something that one needs to be adopted and two will be exciting because you're really picking into the metadata of the video. And then secondly, I think just the increased connectivity is awesome. I know we've been talking about like the advent of 5G for a while and whatnot.
It's
the year of mobile, isn't it? It's here. But it's exciting. I think publishers can hone their products even more so to post heavier creative. And then there are things like this year I saw Travis Scott host a live gig.
This is the Twitch
in
thing.
In Fortnite.
Sorry, yes.
I'm not a gamer. I'm a Travis Scott fan. But which is why I saw it. But it's outrageous, you know, to post something like that within one of the biggest gaming environments in the world is amazing, to be perfectly honest. So I think, the enhanced connectivity of the world definitely lend itself towards more exciting video experiences.
And I saw a brilliant quote on this, which is around 5G, actually, saying that 5G will enable real life to become even more digital and for digital to become even more real life, which if you think about, yeah, some of the AR stuff now. I saw something yesterday of a Nike high top trainer. It was so lifelike, but it was literally, I could look around it and it feels like maybe some of this stuff's going to stop becoming sort of buzzwordy, playful, and actually quite useful. What about you, Jen, in terms of stuff you're excited about video wise?
I am excited about AR as well. There's so many interesting things that you can bring to life in different ways, but I feel like we've been talking about AR for maybe a year or two. We may still be a year or two away from like marketers being able to do something with it. I think the artists and like the brands like Nike will be trailblazing, but for B2B, we're probably a little ways away from being able to do cool stuff. So I think short term for video, I think live streaming will continue to be a thing.
Yeah.
I'm hoping people get more comfortable with it. We have to get more comfortable with it in this new world of work, and I think they'll get a lot more creative. And some people are just still scared of live streaming, when you think about it, it's not that much different than doing a webinar. So I think there'll be a lot more of that.
Tell us a bit about LinkedIn Live as well. I remember seeing the sort of the first one with Jan, and I forget who he was talking to, but it felt broadcast quality. It felt really nice. And it's in a platform that I know and trust, where I'm connected with people, I can talk to them. I mean, it feels like the perfect storm in terms of, is that something you guys have been developing for a while? And it would have happened this year, I'd say it would have happened before all the lockdown stuff, but it's all that timing felt pretty good.
The timing, there was a lot behind the scenes that happened. The live streaming element has been in beta for over a year, and then we introduced it. We fast-tracked events. It was going to be building up slowly over time, and we just needed it as the world to be able to host things. So that did get fast-tracked and is still being iterated on pretty much every quarter. You can expect to see more enhancements with both of those products and also the way they work together. You can live stream into an event. I don't know if listeners have seen the different broadcasts that some of our teams have done, and you can do them in a studio and they look really slick, but you can also do it at home on your desktop. Yeah. So it's really up to the creator.
Nice. And Vincent's final thought in a very sort of Jerry Springer way, but stuff you're getting excited about in video, maybe for next year or beyond.
Yeah, of course, I want to say 5G. I don't know when exactly it's going to be rolled out widely everywhere, but that's obviously a game changer for content consumption and obviously advertising specifically on mobile. So that's definitely something I'm personally excited about. Otherwise, it's really more down to earth on, I'm really all about programmatic, so I'm sorry, but the adoption of header bidding really in the app world is really a game changer for brands and agencies. So at MoPub, our version of header bidding is called advanced bidding. And it's really important to understand that for brands and traditional trading desk, it's really a massive change to be able to compete with traditional mobile ad networks. It is a game changer, and for video as well. Otherwise, another thing I wanted to mention is Twitter acquired a managed service DSP called Cross Install, and they are doing really interesting things on DCO, so dynamic creative optimization, but not only for optimizing the campaign, but actually for the production of the video itself, for the creative. And I really think that's the future of video or advertising video. So yeah, I wanted to highlight this as well.
Yeah, nice. The barometer of how good these things are is when you look at the clock and you're like, we could be going so much longer. We're out of time, unfortunately, but that was brilliant. I love doing these steering group ones because while I get to learn a load of stuff and I sort of get to talk about things I'm interested in, so it's like double whammy for me. But thank you all so much. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Vincent.
Thanks, James.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to our Steering Group special series. Thank you for tuning in to hear what the leading minds across mobile, video, and display have to say on some of the burning topics impacting digital today. If you've enjoyed this session, please share it and tag at IAB UK on Twitter or Instagram. Subscribe wherever you're listening to hear all the Steering Group specials and for the regular IAB UK podcast.